Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to Governing to Win, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. In the March 2012 Harvard Business Review article, The Looming Challenge to U.S. Competitiveness, the authors point out that the U.S. faces a deeper, more fundamental challenge than recovering from a recession of unusual depth and duration, and that is its ability to compete globally. Quote, to restore its competitiveness, America needs a long-term strategy. With the release of the IBM Center book, Governing to Win, Enhancing National Competitiveness Through New Policy and Operating Approaches, the editor Chuck Proe brings together insightful essays by leading thinkers and practitioners that offer a long-term strategy to improve national competitiveness. Since its release, we've dedicated a series of shows that have introduced you to many of the book's contributors, highlighted their insights and perspectives as detailed in Governing to Win. In today's conversation, we'll explore two of the three core sections of the book with a host of contributors. Why is fiscal sustainability integral to national competitiveness? What are the federal government's long-term cost drivers? How can we craft a nonpartisan framework for setting national priorities? How can moving to an enterprise USA approach in government enhance national competitiveness? What does the role of governance, strategic budgeting, and procurement play in enhancing national competitiveness? We'll explore these questions and so much more with Chuck Proe, Dave Walker, Larry Haas, Steve Redburn, Gail Fossler, and Raj Sharma, all contributors to Governing to Win, a new book from the IBM Center for the Business of Government. The U.S. cannot address its economic prospects without a clear understanding of what we mean by competitiveness and how it shapes U.S. prosperity. The concept is widely misunderstood, with dangerous consequences for political discourse, policy, and corporate choices that are all too evident today. So what is national competitiveness? Governing to Win contributors Dave Walker, the former Comptroller General of the United States and CEO of the Comeback America Initiative, and Larry Haas, author of Sound the Trumpets, explain. First up, Dave Walker.
Competitiveness means the ability to compete effectively on a global basis. For example, from an economic standpoint in connection with world markets, you know, it's affected by many things, including our fiscal and monetary policy, our education system, how much we do in the area of research and development, the status of our critical infrastructure, healthcare costs, our tax system. So it's a very important and multidimensional issue.
As Walker notes, this is a very important multidimensional issue that has implications on the fiscal security of the United States. Larry Haas elaborates.
Well, of course, the root is competition or compete, and it really has to do with a country's place in the world. And to the extent that you want to improve U.S. competitiveness in this case, you need to create the right economic environment. You need to have the right monetary policy, regulatory policy, fiscal policy. So you want the Fed to be handling monetary policy correctly, and you want policymakers not to be overregulating, not to be overtaxing, and on the spending side, to be investing in the kinds of things that grow an economy. That has to do with hard things like infrastructure, roads, bridges, internet, so that businesses can be competitive. And on the human capital side, it has a lot to do with education. You want to make sure that you've got a workforce that's well-educated and skilled so that they are ready for the increasingly sophisticated jobs of the future. So in essence, what you're doing, to the extent that you have a competitive nation, you have followed and created the policies that put your businesses and your people in a position to win in an increasingly competitive global environment. That's what competitiveness is.
So given its critical importance, Chuck Proe, editor of Governing to Win, explains why he put this book together. It's about framing the conversation.
What prompted us to put the book together was just our attempt at framing the conversation. Okay, this isn't about, you know, looking at, you know, small pieces of government and concluding that it either works well or doesn't work well. You know, what the book is intended to do is to provide that context that says, as an enterprise, the way we run and manage the federal government has a substantial or a substantive role in improving our national competitiveness. Imagine if, as the largest consumer of undergraduate talent, we were also the most effective institution at developing that talent. You know, imagine if, as the largest consumer of healthcare, we were actually setting the standards for the way we drive down cost of healthcare over time and improve the way healthcare is administered in the United States. Imagine if, as the largest consumer of energy, we were the gold standard in energy efficiency and the consumption of energy.
Recognizing that the way we run and manage the federal government has a significant role in improving our national competitiveness, here's Chuck Proh outlining the core themes of his book, Governing to Win.
The first chapter that describes the fiscal situation we're in. It also tries to make the point that this is not about being Republican or Democrat, right or left. It's about being Americans. And as Americans, our government has some significant structural financial issues. The second section is focused on healthcare, energy, and education. The third chapter is focused on the aspects of managing the federal government. It is really managing government. It is the application of technology. It is the way we run our supply chains. It provides some real-world example of where government is operating very, very effectively today. And hopefully what this book tries to do is to put that in context. So we're framing the economic situation in the federal government. We're talking about three very large issues of energy, health, and education. And then finally, we're talking about how we actually manage government.
As Proh acknowledges, the way we run and manage the federal government contributes to enhancing our national competitiveness. Contributor Dave Walker diagnoses the situation with perfect clarity, crafting a sober reality.
Well, candidly, I believe the federal government has grown too big, promised too much, and waited too long to restructure, but it's not too late. And one of the reasons that we are where we are today is because we've strayed from some of the key principles and values that were the basis of the founding of our nation and that helped to make us great. Things like limited but effective government, individual liberty and opportunity, personal responsibility and accountability, rule of law and equal justice under the law, fiscal responsibility and intergenerational equity, and the key concept of stewardship. In my view, we're violating all of these key principles and values today to differing degrees, and we need to come back to them in order to help create a better future.
At first blush, the problem of the growing federal deficit seems straightforward to fix. The government is spending more than it's collecting in revenue, and policymakers must close the gap. Beneath that view, however, is a far more complex reality. Contributor Larry Haas explains.
You know, I give a lot of speeches about the budget, and I often get the question, very much in the way that you posed it, well, what's the problem here? We're just spending too much. Let's just cut spending. And people seem to have the sense that the budget has a category which is called spending, just spending writ large. It's this kind of metaphysical thing. But the budget, of course, isn't just spending. It's real things for real people. They're there for a reason. We either want them or we need them. When you look at the budget, think about what dominates the budget. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, national security, homeland security, border safety, environmental protection, aid to education, housing, transportation, science, space, all of those things were put in the budget to serve a certain purpose. They all have support for major sectors of the American population, so that when you sort of say, well, why don't we just cut spending? The reason we can't just cut spending, the reason it's not that easy, is that people have an interest. They have a personal interest in what is currently part of the budget. And when you try to cut it, people howl. And to the extent that the program is ever more popular, they howl ever louder. And it makes it hard to cut spending.
Contributor Dave Walker.
There are two major types of direct spending, mandatory spending and discretionary spending. Mandatory spending represents spending on programs that, based upon current law, need to be met, and they're not subject to an annual limit. Discretionary spending represents federal spending on programs that are subject to annual limits and appropriations bills promulgated by the Congress and signed by the President. Interestingly, while at the beginning of the Republic, everything other than interest was deemed to be discretionary spending, today, you know, that's shrunk down to about 37% of the budget and it's continuing to shrink. Ironically, discretionary spending includes all of the express and enumerated responsibilities envisioned by the founders for the federal government, all investments in our future, and all investments in children. And so what's happening is not only has the budget gotten bigger, but we've lost control of the budget. More and more the budget is on autopilot. More and more is for consumption and seniors. Less and less is controlled and is for investment and for young people. The largest government cost is direct spending, and yet tax expenditures are huge. For example, direct spending is about $3.8 trillion a year, of which about 63% of it is mandatory spending. And so therefore only about 37% of spending is really controlled, and that's going down. Tax expenditures represent about $1.1 trillion a year, and they're not controlled at all. These basically aren't in the budget. They're not in the financial statements. They're not subject to periodic review and reexamination, and they need to be treated just the same as direct spending, the same degree of scrutiny to make sure that they're either that they're working and that we're getting an appropriate return on investment.
We hear a lot about the deficit and debt burden, and obviously these are very big challenges. But Dave Walker points out that the real challenge is not where we are, not where we've been, but where we're headed. And this directly concerns our national competitiveness.
Well, from a fiscal standpoint, a lot of people are concerned about current deficits and debt levels, and understandably so. But the real challenge is not where we are, not where we've been, but where we're headed. We have huge unfunded obligations for Medicare, for Social Security. We face a range of other commitments and contingencies, you know, dealing with housing and other types of guarantees that are much, much greater than the amount of, you know, debt and liabilities that we have right now. So we need to start focusing on the future and recognizing that we're on an imprudent and unsustainable path and that we're going to have to make changes. The sooner we make those changes, the better, so that we can avoid a U.S. debt crisis, so that we can phase in the changes, and so that we can get the power of compounding working for us rather than against us as it is now.
Larry Haas elaborates.
What you need to keep in mind as you look forward is to focus on the singularly important issue of health care. Mm-hmm. First of all, we are an aging society. It costs more to treat an old person than a young person. Now, we have that in common with much of the world. Europe is aging, Asia is aging, so it's not like it's anyone's fault here. It's just the case that people are living longer, and that's a great thing. But while they're living longer, and it costs more to treat them by way of healthcare, healthcare costs in America have been rising far in excess of the rate of inflation and growing, in fact, faster than the economy itself is growing. So put a focus on both of those things. Aging society, rising healthcare costs, costs more to treat an older person than a younger person anyway, and now the coming in particular of the retirement of the baby boom generation, this cohort that was born between 1946 and 1964 that's just now becoming eligible for Medicare in particular, but also Medicaid, because senior citizens get their long-term care through Medicaid. So aging society, rising health care costs, retirement of the baby boomers, soaring costs for Medicare and Medicaid, and the longer you look out into the future, the more you see that our budget problem is essentially an aging and health care problem.
Many serious and important decisions, a grand bargain like no other, must be made to right the ship of government. Dave Walker and Larry Haas describe how the federal government's long-term fiscal condition appears very dire, while Chuck Pro underscores that the way we run and manage the federal government contributes significantly to whether our nation is competitive. Larry Haas.
Well, with regard to cultural values, you know, this is a country that was founded on certain principles and certain values, and one of them was thrift. I mean, you have, it sounds like a cliche, but it's really true. You have the old line from Benjamin Franklin, a penny saved is a penny earned. That was something that people believed back then. Balanced budgets were a real article of faith. Government budgets, personal budgets. Borrowing, debt was considered a bad thing. To the extent that we are used to more debt, it does undermine this founding principle of the Republic. Now, the reason it's dangerous is that there is a limit to how much we can borrow. At a certain point, credit markets are going to decide, our lenders overseas, our lenders at home are going to decide that they've lent us enough money. They start getting worried about their investment. Will they ever see it come back? Will the government continue to be able to make the interest payments on the debt that are owed each year? To the extent that there is an irresponsible federal policy, which is what we have right now, it does undermine competitiveness because responsible federal policy on the budget and everything else is a principle of global competitiveness. The more we have a healthy budget, all else being equal, the more competitive the country will be. So it has implications, cultural and economic, in a very real sense of the term.
Next up, Steve Redburn discusses a new strategic approach for reforming our country's budgeting process. And Gail Fossler explains how governance is the new competitiveness imperative. When Governing to Win, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour returns.